Hello and welcome to another edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. This time you find me chatting to Lee Sanders, Registrar and Secretary at the University of Birmingham. Lee talks about his all-encompassing role across professional services at Birmingham, as well as in relation to governance and as a member of the University Executive. Drawing on experiences from both Durham and Warwick, where Lee and I worked together for a period, he observes that things have really changed quite considerably since our time together, and we've all had to adapt to what is now a very different operating environment for universities. Lee comments on the convening power of a registrar and notes the value of this in the context of responding to the pandemic over the past year. He also reflects on the importance of partnerships in the response, including partnerships with students, between academics and professional services staff, and across professional services too. Other features of the pandemic response he highlights are communicating with confidence, not overcomplicating things, and enlisting the support of the expert academic community, from establishing testing facilities to forming advisory groups. We also talk about the importance of the longer term, thinking to the future, including the blended learning experience for students, changes to working practices from agile working to new operational processes, and also different uses of space on campus. Finally, we discuss the value of the generalist administrative experience and the benefits of graduate training programmes, including Birmingham's own scheme, which has been running in parallel to the National Ambitious Futures programme. Lee and I firmly agree on the importance of addressing the future leadership needs of the sector via such schemes, as well as recruiting talented administrators who've also made a great contribution to the recovery effort. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome then to Registrars Talking About Stuff, and this time it's my enormous pleasure to introduce Lee Sanders from the University of Birmingham. Lee's Registrar and Secretary at the University of Birmingham, has previously worked at Durham University and the University of Warwick, where indeed we worked together for a number of years. So Lee, welcome. It would be really great as a kickoff if you could actually just describe the range of your job, because you're one of those what we call unitary registrars, I think. You cover just about everything. So could you list the big things that you do?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And thanks for having me on to have a chat and talk about stuff, as you say. I've been registrar and secretary at Birmingham now for 12 years. And the role, as you say, is a big one. It is a unitary position. So I am responsible for all the professional services at the university, including things like finance and estates and HR. And so it's all encompassing. We have a college system at the University of Birmingham. Organisationally, we're divided into five academic colleges, super faculties, if you like, academic divisions. And each of those has also an administration and a director of operations, and they report through to our academic registrar, who's responsible for me. So I also have a sort of indirect responsibility for the administration in the colleges and the schools, which is probably not typical, but I have that responsibility too. So it's like a big chief operating officer position in that regard. That's the first thing to say. Secondly, like I'm sure many colleagues, I'm responsible for university governance, secretary to council, and so on. And thirdly, member of the university executive. And as you know, and I'm sure colleagues know, that takes up a big part of the job in terms of everything that goes with that, advising the vice chancellor and senior colleagues and getting involved in internal and external policy matters. So that's
fantastic. So it is a really broad portfolio with an awful lot of staff and budget. Then, I mean, just on the, and I think it, there aren't, you know, that many big jobs with that kind of span still continuing in UK universities. I think you know, they've declined over the years, I think. But tell me, does it feel massive? Or does the fact that you've got a kind of a top team around you who are leading in each of these areas kind of actually make it work much better in practice?
I mean, I think the you're absolutely right. The answer is about the people you've got working with you, the senior team and the directors of the professional services who, you know, run very, very significant operations in their own right. So that I couldn't do it without them. And I'm fortunate to have some great colleagues who run those functions. That's absolutely crucial. I was a registrar at Durham for a while, and that, if you like, allowed me to learn the ropes at a smaller institution. That was incredibly useful. And it therefore made it easier for me to make the transition to a bigger role at Birmingham. So that's worth noting. I didn't sort of come straight to it from not having been registrar before. So many of the things you encounter, one has encountered in one shape or form. So you draw on that experience, and, you know, with experience, that things become a bit easier. But Birmingham, and, you know, we're not alone. There are some other very big universities around. It's a very, very big institution. And what feels big about it is, you know, the scale of what we do. We do every subject from medicine to music and everything in between, other than veterinary science and fine art and design, really. We do everything. So getting around and knowing the academic community can be a challenge. And one of the things I've always done is to try and get out there, out and about, leave your office, talk to academics, get interested in their research and teaching. And that becomes a challenge because of scale, in a way that it wasn't when we were together at Warwick all those years ago, but also at Durham. The other thing I think you have to put a lot of effort into is one thing that I think is often overlooked in amongst registrars is, if you like, the power to convene, the ability to pull groups of people together to discuss things and get things done. And, you know, I think that's really helpful, and it's an underplayed skill or opportunity. And you've got to use that a lot, I think, in the university of scale.
I think that's a really interesting point about, the convening power. It is convening through consensus, though, I think.
Very much
which,
so.
I mean, reflecting back, as I'm sure you do from time to time, on that Warwick experience, of course, we had a registrar there who was a unitary registrar, who was a really incredibly powerful figure. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, he convened with authority. And was able to bring together people, essentially to enact his will in perhaps a way which I don't think, you know, things change, times change. What are your reflections now on that kind of experience and that style that we both had at Warwick and where we are now? Because it seems that, you know, things have moved on and it just doesn't work like that anymore.
Doesn't work like that anymore. I mean, we're talking back early 90s now, when it was a smaller sector. These were smaller institutions, you didn't have all the complexity internally and externally that we have now. So, you know, necessarily, I think things have moved on. You have to use other means. Now, when I meant the power to convene, I didn't mean, you know, to enact will. I mean to bring people together.
Yeah.
To help move things forward inside the institution. They were interesting times as well, because another dimension of that is that, the administration was sort of populated by people who'd been hired, many of whom probably would or could have been academics or, you know, with PhDs and first class degrees and things, who had a sort of empathy for academic life and were interested in that. And probably because of the nature of the institutions at that time, were moved around a lot. And that was hugely enjoyable and exciting. And you certainly learned a lot. I think that's something that's changed, because even though I know you and I still think there's a lot in the ability for people to be intellectually flexible and generalists and move around and try different things, complexity places a premium on specialism. And, you know, there's all that to cope with as well. So I think there's some important differences, and I don't think one would want to replicate exactly the way things happened all those years ago, but they were certainly formative and you learnt a lot.
I completely agree, and I've got no time for the kind of nostalgia of looking back. Although sometimes it is quite fun, but in terms of operations in the here and now, it's it is a very, very different environment. It's a very different sector, as you described. We're operating in a very, very different legislative framework as well, and also you've got the external forces around Brexit and around devolution within the nations, which also just creates all sorts of different competing forces on universities that make it a very, very different environment to that we grew up in, as it were, at Warwick. But the other thing, of course, which we've not really mentioned yet, which we need to come on to, is, of course, the response to the pandemic. And although in those days we thought we had challenges, right, we had nothing compared with what we've experienced over the past 12 months. So what's your reflections now, a year on? I mean, this is when we're talking. It's almost exactly a year to the day when, the first lockdown happened. What's your reflections about the way your university responded, and what do you think you've kind of learned from it?
Yeah, right. I want to be honest about this. I think I've been in university management for 30, perhaps more years, and this is the hardest and most challenging thing that I've encountered. Certainly on a sustained basis. I mean, we've all had to deal with emergencies. I mean, I think one of the first things I had to deal with when I came to Birmingham was the whole university being without power for 2 weeks when the Western power supply went down for our part of the city. So, and I'm sure the same with many colleagues across the sector. We've had to deal and cope with emergencies. They've just not of this scale or lasted so long. And undoubtedly they've, that brings its challenges. Look, what are my reflections looking back? I think it's one or two observations. And look, I'm not going to claim we did anything special at Birmingham. I'm sure we did very similar things to what everybody else has been doing, grappling with similar problems. Early on, we decided that partnership was going to be really important in the response. Partnership in every sense of the word. Partnership with the student body, with our guild of students. We worked jolly hard and with some success, I think, to make sure that everything we were doing, we were working in partnership with our student guild. And that has helped. It helped from the start in terms of we didn't experience the same kind of challenges in residences and student parties. We introduced a behaviour code for students early on. Again, many other places did. And we put a lot of effort into the support and care package for students with support from our guild. The partnership between our academic community and professional services, which is generally good at Birmingham, actually, something we worked hard on, and I think academic colleagues would say that too. That served us very well. Partnership between professional services, perhaps easier to achieve if you've got things joined up, but even so, we all know these things can be challenges at times, and particularly when placed under stress of a pandemic. And importantly, I think, partnership externally. So we've got a great relationship with our Director of Public Health. And we began those conversations well over a year ago when it first came out, the worrying signs from China back in January, February last year. And, that set us in good stead. Partnership with the other regional universities in the city. We convened a meeting with our counterparts across the city to talk about common issues. And that's been really useful to learn from each other. And as you know, we've also had a lot of national conversations with through AHUA, through the Russell Group, through UUK, and linking in with those organisations has been very good as well. And behind the scenes with government, we're fortunate at Birmingham because we've got, David Eastwood as Vice Chancellor, as many people will know, is hugely well connected. And so being able to connect with often, behind the scenes and talking to people in government to talk things through has been helpful as well. So partnership, I would say, has been one of the things that we put effort into. And none of that's, necessarily profound or rocket science. It's just it's worth putting the legwork in on that. Communications, just everybody, it's a massive challenge, isn't it? Particularly when there are times of uncertainty when people feel they can't say things definitively because they're waiting for the next set of DfE guidance. One thing we've tried to do always at Birmingham is to be self-confident enough to be to be saying, well, this is what we plan to do, assuming the government, you know, confirm it, rather than wait and see. So communications with confidence on a regular basis and a consistent basis is important. Not overcomplicate things would be another thing I'd say. We had one single group that was responsible for coordinating our emergency response, which is called the CERT. We call it Strategic Emergency Response Team, the GOAL command that I chair. Mm. We got all the people on that in the same room, and we just sorted things out and through that group, and as necessary, escalated it up to our executive board, even up to council for approval and so on, rather than proliferate groups or be driven by sort of gold, silver and bronze paraphernalia. You know, you want a group that meets regularly. We meet every week, tightly, getting things done. It's a doing group. And yes, it, you know, occasionally we have other groups in between that do some of the work, but that's the group that has been sitting for over a year. And in fact, one of the challenges has been for us, you know, the risk of that is you can create a dependency on a single group. And, you know, we're talking about standing it down now as things look more optimistic for the autumn, so that we can signal a return to normality. I mean, I could say more, but I thought it would be worth just mentioning those things. Partnership, comms with confidence, and a simple organizational structure. Yeah. Don't overcomplicate the organizational structure.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, I think on the partnership bit, I mean, certainly, you know, our experience has been at Nottingham, you know, very similar in terms of the, you know, the really good bonds with the city, with public health, with the county, with, you know, with other agencies too. And that's been really strong, and an awful lot of recognition of the work that the university has done, as I'm sure Birmingham has, in terms of its contribution towards the research effort, as well as, you know, students volunteering and, you know, vaccinations and, you know, supporting the response to COVID, which all of which I think is a real plus. I think the challenges we've had have been around, you know, very small, you know, in terms of number, examples of poor behaviour on the part of students. The problem is that they do get amplified because, you know, the media are looking for that kind of thing. And of course, student behaviour is a hot topic. As you said, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, we had all this stuff around, you know, students being locked in halls and all the rest of it, and post-its in windows and all the rest of it, which, you know, was a media gift, wasn't it? And actually, in terms of the reality, it was, you know, very much, you know, a small and indeed temporary part of the totality of the student experience. But unfortunately, it just gets weighed more heavily, I think. And all the great stuff that you describe, you know, tends to be, you know, kind of balance out, which is I guess forever the challenge that we as universities face. But it does come back to the importance of those sustained partnerships over time, is that you actually, you know, get that understanding in due course. I mean, did you have any of that kind of tension in Birmingham?
Yeah, I mean, I should say I completely agree with you about sustained partnerships, you know, knowing people before you're in an emergency. And yes, you know, the partnerships get deepened through the experience of the emergency, but you know, knowing having some of those connections to begin with. Yeah, we did have some. I mean, look, we didn't have any instances of big scale parties, touch wood, we've not had any so far, but we've had a number of small scale incidents. I mean, we were talking earlier on about how I do the role, and it would perhaps be invidious to call out all the many fantastic people at our university that have done great things. But we're really lucky in that I've got a fantastic director of campus services in Simon Bray, who joined us a while ago from Bristol. And he really knows everything there is to know about, you know, residences, catering, conferences, all that kind of things. The facilities management on campus, and importantly, the team working with the student community, and he and his fantastic team have been brilliant on you know, the leadership they've provided, and have gone on really, really well with the students. Can I mention something else that I think
please.
It has been a real challenge for the sector, but also important, is, and you talked about enlisting the support of academic colleagues, particularly in medicine and life sciences, and all the fantastic research they're doing for COVID. I think we were lucky, and this greatly helped how we managed that whole approach to the pandemic. You know, early on, a number of our academic colleagues were heavily involved in establishing the Lighthouse Labs for testing. And we were I think we were the first university to set up a turnkey lab, you know, our own PCR testing lab on campus. Back last August, September. And that having a testing capability has been really helpful. And, you know, I know a lot of universities have not been able to enjoy that, or, you know, it's been more of a challenge. And I know you've also had something similar. Undoubtedly, that's been helpful. And then on the back of that, you know, getting the asymptomatic ATCRO testing facility up and running early and open for students, and which is still open and running. So testing capability led by well-known and respected academic colleagues. And we've got a fantastic guy at Birmingham called Alan McAnally, who helped set up the Milton Keynes testing lab. Professor Alan McAnally from my medical school. And he's been a pleasure to work with through this whole process. So, you know, enlisting the support and influential voices within the academic community can be helpful with all of this.
I think you're absolutely right, Lee. I mean, we've had a hugely valuable group of academic colleagues who've kind of, you know, worked in an advisory group capacity to ensure that, you know, all of the steps we took were sensible and appropriate. So, you know, all of the measures that we took to make our classrooms safe were ones that had been discussed with and considered by that advisory group and tested on them to make sure that they would work in practice. So that's been enormously helpful. And as you say, you know, having that wisdom and that knowledge of academic experts is just so helpful in so many ways, as well as their contribution towards the public effort as well, which has been, you know, terrific. And again, you know, I think it's marvelous to see universities making such a contribution. I mean, one of the challenges I think we've all found is looking past the immediate and the here and now in our response, and trying to think how we plan our way out of this, how we prepare not just for next term, but for next session, and indeed for longer term strategic success of our universities. And I wonder how what your experience of that has been, and whether Birmingham have found a way to get people thinking long term rather than just short term.
Well, certainly we put a lot of effort into thinking about the future and learning the experience from this year. And that, look, at times it's been exhilarating, hasn't it? As well as challenging and exhausting. And, you know, we've all been doing blended working from home, and, you know, we all know the challenges that brings as well. So, but actually within all of that, there have been some really interesting things that I think we will take forward for the future. I'm sure we're not alone in this. I'm sure your university and many others will do. Starting with, you know, digital education, delivery and assessment. I'm sure that we're all going through a process, I know we are, of thinking about the way in which education would be delivered in a, if you like, even though we hope to return to a more face-to-face experience and a campus experience, because of the kind of universities yours is and mine is, that the campus experience is hugely important. And that will always mean an element of face-to-face. You know, thinking about the way in which there can be digital complementarity in that, changing the nature of the lecture, for example, changing the way in which the various technologies are used in and outside the classroom, even having people in the same lecture who are both physically present in the room and who are zooming in and so on. So all of that we're looking at, and there is a huge amount of work being led by our senior education team under our Pro Vice Chancellor for Education. I'm sure that's true of your institution and others. And I think, you know, it is one of the huge success stories of the sector that it has adapted so rapidly to blended education. You know, there's a lot in that. Secondly, I think we're all thinking about what it means for the workplace. And even though I do believe, you know, universities are universities, they're communities, and we're here to support students and get the research done, and there'll always be an element in which we have to be involved and physically present, engaging with people. You know, people miss team meetings and the chance for face-to-face engagement, and you know, those sorts of things tend to spark innovation and, you know, help team development. So all of that, I think people are looking forward to coming back. But, you know, naturally, we're all asking questions about what it might mean for flexible and agile working in the future. And are there roles where, you know, people will work more from home, as well as spending time with their teams on campus doing activities? So we're going through a process at the moment of thinking about that for the future, and not just for the next 6 months or the start of the next academic year, what it means. And I guess others will be doing exactly the same. I think it makes you think about some of the areas we're responsible for, some of the operational processes. Could we think about the way in which we've succeeded running the institution virtually, remotely for, if not a year, but certainly the first part of it, bits of this year. And so we're thinking about whether there are opportunities around, you know, services, and that will often, I think, go together with the issue of flexible working. So, you know, we're in the process at the moment of creating a shared service hub for all staff facing HR and payroll, which we wanted to do anyway, but this has accelerated it. And, you know, as well as thinking about the way the services will be delivered differently based on this last 12 months experience, it is also thinking about the kind of physical space the staff will occupy and their approach to working. Yep. So that's just one example. I'm sure colleagues up and down have got all sorts of different and similar examples. So I think I would say that. Look, we're not finished with it yet. We've still got a lot more work to do.
But we talked earlier about the value of the kind of the generalist administrative experience and the rotation around the university. And you, for a number of years, run a graduate trainee program, which is as running kind of parallel to the national scheme that I was involved in, Ambitious Futures, which a number of other universities were involved in. That's now sadly wound up, but a number of other universities still continuing with their graduate program. But you've continued with it. And did you just say why? Because I mean, I've personally been really disappointed at the number of universities who backed away from, you know, from their graduate training commitment. And yet, you know, we're continuing with ours. But do you want to just say a little bit about your rationale?
Yeah, you and I feel passionately about this, don't we, Paul? And, you know, I'm absolutely with you on this. And I'd just like to commend you for all the leadership you provided nationally in getting the scheme off the ground. I'm sorry to hear that it's wound up. I hadn't heard that. And that's a real shame, because I think it's a loss for the sector. But because we're a big university and a big employer, we could afford to run our own graduate management trainee scheme. I started it off some years ago when fees were introduced, the £9,000 fee, because we were thinking about employment opportunities for our graduates, and we wanted to make a contribution to that. So it was as much thinking about, you know, we're really proud, aren't we, when our graduates get graduate level jobs and enter graduate management training schemes in other sectors, and we think it's terrific. Where, you know, universities are a massive international sector with thousands of job opportunities. And, you know, why aren't we therefore doing something both for our own graduates and also thinking about the future leadership of the sector? So to me, they just went together: employment opportunities and also future needs of the sector. So yeah, we've been running our scheme for that's not quite 10 years, it must be 8 years. And so we've had a number of cohorts. We started off relatively modestly with four, but we've been up to six. We started with a scheme just open to Birmingham graduates. We did open it up more broadly. It's something we constantly keep under review. We've had some terrific graduates through the scheme. And what I would say is there's a half a dozen of them that are actively involved in what we were talking about throughout this podcast, which is helping with the management and the recovery from COVID in critical roles, supporting all the activity we've been talking about. The kind of intellectual confidence that they have, the kind of flexibility of working that their experience of having spent 2 years working in different parts of the university, the networks they've built up, and the confidence the academic and the professional services communities have in them, you know, I couldn't wish for more. It's because they're, you know, So we're lucky because we're of a scale where we can run that scheme. Because it's a unified administration, you can make it happen. You don't have to kind of negotiate all the while about this stuff. It's easy to organize the placements and so on. I'll be honest with you, when we were all facing some financial challenges early last year and we weren't sure about how this year would pan out, you know, we did put recruitment to the scheme on hold. We've reactivated it again now. So we will continue with the scheme because I believe passionately that it's the way to you know, create our own future leaders.
Absolutely agree. And it's terrific to hear you've restarted it. I mean, I do think it is the, you know, it's the future of our profession, the future of our sector as well. And as you say, you get such able people who are enthusiastic about pursuing a career in university administration, but also passionate about the sector and about higher education and about learning and about wanting to play a part in the wider sector as well. And it's enormously encouraging. So long may your scheme continue. It's a terrifically optimistic way to end what, you know, is sometimes a grim discussion about the challenges we've had over the past year. But Lee, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thanks ever so much for taking the time. Thank you.
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.